We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is Bruce Pearl.
Sean Shire.
Sean Miller.
I love the Field of 68.
I listen to you guys every morning.
Are we still live?
UConn wasn't on my radar.
From the bluest of the blue bloods to the smallest of the mid-majors, the only way to keep up college basketball is through the Field of 68.
Welcome back to episode number 2 of the House of Hoosier podcast. Reimagined House of Hoosier podcast once again. Intro to everything last week. I'm Ben Haller. I'm new to the pod. Austin Platt, you've known him for a long time. You've known him doing this pod for the last couple of years with AJ Guyton. This is going to be the season preview, just that 15 minutes introduction last week. So this is where we're going to really dive into the season and everything. Once again, though, just to remind you where you can find the new Reimagined podcast. Still can find it on the Field of 68 Twitter. You can find it on our new Twitter for House Hoosier podcast, House_Hoosier. That's where we're going to be putting a lot of content, not just the podcast, but hopefully some more special stuff too. And then the Field of 68 podcast network on YouTube. You can find this podcast on all of those networks and sites. And once again, just trying to get more creative content up on the Twitter too, on House_Hoosier especially. But we're just gonna dive right into it right now. Indiana coming into this season, a lot of question marks. It's not a whole lot of roster turnover from last year, especially with the Xavier Johnson getting hurt for most of last year, getting that waiver to come back this year. So a lot of turnover on the roster. Mackenzie Mbako has been a big storyline too in the news as of late, but he's going to be asked to be a big role here and really the head of at least six newcomers that might play somewhat of a role, three transfers, three freshmen. We're going to get into that. And Austin, I just want to ask you, you know, first of all, who are you most excited for? Which newcomer are you most excited for to this team? You have the freshman in Mbako, Cups, and Newton. You got some transfers in Kalel Ware, Peyton Sparks, and Anthony Walker. I just want to get where your head's at first.
For me, Ben, it has to be Mackenzie Mbako. I know it's been a busy week for him, maybe not in the right way, but I think he is one of the biggest. He was the first domino to fall, in a sense, of Indiana looking towards kind of this next batch of recruiting. Obviously, a Duke decommit and winning that battle over Kansas was a huge first step. And his ability, obviously, a top 10 prospect in the country and someone who we expect, again, just like Jalen Hood-Schifino, should be a one and done. And if everything goes right for him, he should be playing in the NBA next year. So that obviously has to excite me. His ability to stretch the floor. Is he going to play as a three, maybe bigger as a four? Obviously, we know Mike Woodson likes to go big with his lineups, and it seems like this year that's going to be no different. But to bring him in, obviously, to surround this freshman group and really a group we don't know a ton about, obviously, they've worked together a lot over the summer, but we'll see the first gameplay this weekend in the first of two exhibitions. But for me, it has to be Mbako, obviously. When you decommit from Duke, there's something you're doing right. So his ability, his prowess on the court, and his shooting ability, and maybe his ability to stretch the floor a little bit as a 3-4, whatever Mike Woodson decides to play him in, he's got to be the one that excites me the most.
Yeah, it's hard not to say Mbako right now, not only because, you know, the excitement around him, but Indiana kind of needs him to take a bigger scoring role coming into this season, just because it's hard to say where a lot of the scoring is going to be. Kalel Ware, you know, you have to take the numbers last year with a grain of salt with that injury and everything at Oregon. you know, hopefully coming to Indiana this year, we'll have an improve and a jump in those offensive numbers, but only averaged about 6-7 points for Oregon last year in the limited games that he played. Xavier Johnson, you know, is a really good passer, really good point guard, but he hasn't shown that elite scoring level that Indiana would need. Trey Galloway, kind of the same way, just in terms of can score, but hasn't necessarily been consistent in his first couple of years with Indiana. So Mackenzie Ibaka has to take that consistent role with this Indiana team, and scoring from different levels as well is what Indiana needed too. You know, we talked about what this lineup's going to look like with two bigs, and you made a joke before we filmed, if he's starting, it's almost a three big lineup. But that's not, you know, too much of a dangerous thing, because he can play outside as well. He's not just an inside scoring threat, but he has the ability to score from all different levels. A big thing too is, I talked about it, is how much can Xavier Johnson contribute, not just in the passing game and setting up the offense, but can he score as well? What do you see him doing this year?
Obviously, it depends on if he's 100% healthy, Ben, and that's kind of, I think, the first thing here, and this was the biggest question of the offseason. If Xavier Johnson comes back, well, then Mike Woodson's job, obviously not easy, trying to replace, obviously, two guys in the NBA, really losing 4 out of 5 starters, if you think about it. But for him, if he's healthy, you assume he is. Obviously, I think he wanted to play late last year, but realized if you take a look at the bigger picture, it was better for him to take a gamble. And it's not really a gamble anymore with the NCAA. They hand out those waivers pretty quickly and pretty easily now these days. But for him, can he stay healthy? Can he, you know, work it up and down, be as good downhill as he was a few years ago? And can he make the right decisions? I think the biggest thing for Woodson is, or for Xavier Johnson, is he knows that Mike Woodson obviously trusts him as a leader, as what we think, at least probably to start maybe the primary scorer for Indiana this year. Obviously averaged right around 10 points last year, and obviously was great down the stretch 2 years ago, which led IU to the tournament. But can he make the right decisions? Can he avoid those silly fouls? Can he avoid those turnovers, which really, you know, make the fans, I guess, try and pull their hair out in a sense? But I think the biggest thing is, can he be smart with the basketball? We know he can beat anyone one-on-one, it feels like, and get to the rim, of course, with the guys around him, and if he gets the right screen and whatnot. But for me, I think it's more, can he be smart on the floor, obviously, while staying healthy, rather than, you know, how many points can he rack up? I think the more important thing is his assist to turnover ratio, I think, will decide how many minutes Mike Woodson will allow him to play. Obviously, you got to stay out of foul trouble as well, which at times last year, you commit, you know, 1 or 2 boneheaded fouls after missing a shot or making a bad play or something like that. So I think for me, with Xavier Johnson, health, of course, is the priority, but can he, you know, dish out the assist more than the turnovers, improve that rate, and then I think everything else will kind of come around.
I think last year Indiana got away with, for a really long time, not being a great three-point shooting team, and the percentages weren't low by any means. It just wasn't a team that took a whole lot of threes. I mean, there was not a lot of guys. I think Miller Kopp was the leading three-point shooter in attempts, and I think in three-point percentage. Trey Galloway has not shown his full capability shooting from beyond the arc. Jalen Huccifino, as good as he was, it wasn't really a strong suit. And then you had Rhys Thompson, Trace Jackson Davis down low. Within that starting five already, just not a whole lot of shooting. This year, it's also, once again, Gabe Cupp's coming in. But other than him, it's hard to find where that three-point shooting is going to come from, especially with Miller Kopp on the way out. I think that's one of the biggest things that Xavier Johnson needs to contribute. He's really a streaky shooter. He's had some really hot games last year. You look at a couple games he had against Xavier earlier in the season against some of those non-conference opponents. He hit 3-4 threes, but he'd go a 2 or 3 game stretch without hitting a three. And a lot of that's not due to his shooting ability. A lot of that's due to what Indiana needed at the time and needing him to be the point guard and set up plays first. But I think he needs to take a broader role in being able to shoot the three ball a little bit more consistently this year too. We talked about the that three-point shooting and how that's effective of a two-big lineup. Mike Woodson's been big on two-big lineups for a long time. The first two years here, he's used them. He used it with Race and Trace last year with Malik Renew rotating in a little bit. This year, it's even hard to imagine a lineup that isn't a two-big lineup, just with where the depth for Indiana is this year, especially with Khalil Ware and Malik Renew expected to be in the starting lineup. Mackenzie Ibaka can play everywhere. Is that a negative for Indiana going into this year?
It feels like it potentially could be. I'm just worried about the depth of the guard position, kind of after Xavier Johnson and Trey Galloway, obviously Gabe Cups, you feel like is going to be that next guy. But kind of after that, you're kind of, I don't want to say grasping at straws, but you need to see CJ Gunn. He needs a big step forward, obviously. You lose Tamar Bates, so those minutes are going to have to be filled. But other than those guys, kind of where does the depth come in? So I assume this team is going to go big. I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing this year, but I think we saw last year against some teams, rebounding was the biggest issue, Ben, down the stretch of the Miami game. I don't think Indiana could grab a single defensive rebound even after they had come back and taken the lead momentarily. So for me, can these bigs, you know, rebound? Can they defend? Can the guards box out and make sure they don't get beat down low on the offensive glass? So I think that there's pros and cons. Obviously, the three-point percentage was high last year for Indiana, but the reason why is because they had so many open threes. Obviously, when you have Trace Jackson Davis needing two, three guys to guard you, that's what's going to happen. So these guys are going to have to knock down their threes. I think there's pros and cons with any lineup, and I think there potentially could be more cons. This team has to knock down more threes and attempt more threes is the biggest thing for me. So it's still kind of on the edge yet. We don't necessarily know what it's going to necessarily look like with the spacing, which is another question mark, but I think I'm a bit worried about the depth at guard, which is why it's going to be a big lineup.
It's funny that you bring up the rebounding being a big reason Indiana wasn't able to come away with that round of 32 win against Miami, because I think this is something that goes hand in hand with a three-point shooting, in that throughout the regular season in college basketball, especially in the Big Ten Conference, you can get away with not being the best three-point shooting team and playing a lot down low. It has seemed like in recent history, a lot of those teams have gotten exposed, that play that style, have gotten exposed come tournament time, come March Madness. And that's the reason the Big Ten hasn't produced so well in March Madness. You look at so much of the talent recently in the last couple of years in the Big Ten, a lot of it's been in the paint. So that's going to be one of the concerns moving forward. And it was kind of a storyline that we had a lot of last year. It was just that, sure, it worked in the regular season, but what does it mean in March Madness? But I think with a lot of roster turnover and a lot of new guys, it's just March Madness isn't something this team's quite worrying about yet. Not that, you know, they're not projected to make the tournament by at this point in the preseason. I mean, I think most people say they will. But I just think right now they have to find their footing in the regular season and find their identity first before they can worry about some of those, you know, March Madness different stylistic struggles. It also brings me to the next point in just how deep this Indiana team is and is going to be throughout the season. I mean, how deep can they go? I mean, you have 9 or 10 guys who I could see getting some significant playing time, but a lot of it just depends on how they look to start the year. So what's your cutoff, do you think, coming into the season?
Boy, it's tough, because you remember last year, Mike Woodson said they'd be willing to roll out, you know, 9, 10 guys in a rotation. I mean, they sung praises about Logan Duncan the entire offseason. He really didn't play. But I mean, for me, I think you kind of the three guards we mentioned, obviously, they're very deep at the big with obviously you think the Renu, both Kalel Ware and then Mbaka are all going to start. And you have, you know, Anthony Walker coming off the bench, the Miami transfer, Caleb Banks. I think someone's going to have to make a big jump. I know he's a bit lanky for that forward position. But other than that, kind of where out Peyton Sparks is another name. So Indiana is definitely kind of heavy down low in terms of the depth. But for me, Ja'Kai Newton obviously is a question mark. He underwent that procedure in August to fix that knee. He wasn't didn't have a brace on or anything like that at Hoosier Stereo, which I think the biggest takeaway is something that is off the floor. I think it just shows you can't really take a lot away from that great event we saw last Friday. But other than CJ Gunn, I kind of, that's my cutoff. So I guess that makes what, 8 or 9. I don't think they necessarily go down to 10, but if an injury, you know, if last few years injuries have played a factor, if that does happen, especially at the guard position, boy, you're really going to be thinned out in that way. So I think 9 is the cutoff for now, but for me, it's 4 guards and 5 forwards, I guess, is my kind of distribution.
It's funny you bring up the Hoosier Stereo. We were talking before if we were going to talk anything about Hoosier Stereo on the podcast in the preview, and there's just not a whole lot you can take. You know, obviously a fan favorite event, and fan get to see the players and everything, but the scrimmage, the 3-point contest doesn't really show a lot. So we kind of stayed away from that. I think, you know, if everyone, even when everyone's fully healthy, which doesn't happen a whole lot, I think you get into big Ten games, and I think this, you might see a couple of regular season games where this team only goes 7 deep. I think Caleb Banks is going to get a lot of playing time. I think Gabe Cupps, they're going to give a lot of chances early. And then CJ Gunn in that eighth spot. I think there definitely are games where, you know, Peyton Sparks and Anthony Walker will get significant minutes. But I just think it's a team that the starting line, there's a kind of a big drop off between the starting lineup and the bench. And I think it's a team that if they the starting lineup can stay fully healthy, they're good condition. They're experienced guys. Galloway, Johnson have been playing college basketball for a few years now. Malik Renew picked up that experience. Mackenzie Mbako is just a different freshman. But I think, you know, if you get down the line, and it's hard to even say who those two freshmen off the bench or two bench players would be moving forward because we just don't know going into the season. But I do think this could be a team different than a lot of Woodson's teams in the past that could go seven or eight deep in those big games. That brings us to our next segment. We're going to do a little buy-sell action on some of the some roster guys coming into the year. You have your Malik Renews who we know a lot of what we're going to expect, but some unknown guys coming into the season. I want to start with Gabe Cupps. What do you think, buy or sell?
I think we have to buy him because if Xavier Johnson gets into foul trouble, if Trey Galloway's not providing the spark or just that the spark, I guess, that he needs as the two, as that shooting guard, I think you're going to have to buy into Gabe Cupps. I know, obviously, a big name that Indiana got a few years ago, a bit maybe undersized at 6'2", but obviously knows what the kind of the basketball is like in the Midwest from Ohio, the Ohio Mr. Basketball, and someone who's played on the AAU circuit. So he's someone I have to buy. I think the biggest thing is for him defending. I know he can get to the rack as well. Xavier Johnson's, I think, done a great job already kind of taking Gabe under his wing because it seems like Cupps is going to be that next kind of four-year guy. See him really develop over these next few years, especially if Indiana recruiting-wise continues to do the way they do, then Cupps, I think, is going to be forced to stay here at IU for all 4 years. But I think if Woodson can allow him to really focus on a defense, we know his spark, he can get to the rack, he can score, he's quick. Obviously, being maybe a bit undersized, it helps in that way, 6'2", 175. So if he can be physical and defend and not allow guys around him, then I think you have to buy his stock because I think the big three guards-wise is going to have to be Cupps, Galloway, and Xavier Johnson. And we know Mike Woodson is not afraid to pull a guy or to yell at him. And Xavier Johnson, I surely could tell us some stories about that. So you have to buy, I think, into Gabe Cupps' stock and his ability to truly transition all 4 years. I'm excited to see his growth.
Yeah, I like that you mentioned that he's feels like going to be one of those four-year guys. And not to say that he won't be good eventually in the next couple of years once he gets experience. I'm going to sell him for his freshman season. Cupps just strikes me as a guy that I think is going to take a little bit of time to get adjusted just because of the type of player he is. He's a point guard. He sees the ball very well. He's a passer first when he needed to be in high school. You keep in mind in high school, until his senior year, he was never really the best player on his high school team. He had a lot of talented guys in Tom House and Rich Rolfe, a couple guys that went A-10, ACC level. So for Gabe Cupps, for me, it's just someone who I feel like is going to take a little bit of time to get adjusted to the new level, to a new kind of speed in college. And for someone that relies so much on being able to make plays and being able to make those passes, college is just a different game. So I think at least early on and a good chunk of his freshman season, I'm going to sell him. And go the transfer route. How about Anthony Walker?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I think for now it's sell just because obviously Miami, we know what they've done the last few years, obviously so underrated last year, beat Miami, or rather beat Houston, got to the Final Four and took care of Indiana pretty easily, but you know, they handled them, beat them by a pretty good margin. But I think just the fact that, you know, his minutes have gone down, he averaged nearly 10 points a few years ago, but I think just with the guys around him, I'm not quite sure yet. And Peyton Sparks is someone I think Indiana obviously know, Ball State much closer in terms of following him and his stats and his progression, obviously one of the best players in that conference last year. So I don't think he's going to be the first forward off the bench, assuming it's a three forward lineup. So for now, I'm going to sell Anthony Walker. And it's not just because Miami beat IU last year. I think we need to know a little bit more, as you say, about Gabe Cupps. I'm in the same boat for Anthony Walker.
Yeah, I'd buy him just because, you know, you mentioned how the experience that he has had at Miami, the minute you said the playing time has gone down a little bit, but you mentioned it's been a good Miami team, and it's another Miami team. You saw it in the second round against Indiana last year that didn't go deep into their bench. So you take that those kind of minutes with a grain of salt. I also think he plays somewhat of a role that Indiana just doesn't have a lot of guys at this particular role in terms of he can sort of be a little bit of a wing. And it's just an Indiana team. You look at the starting lineup, and it really only feels like, you know, they have one true wing kind of when you combine Trey Galloway and Mackenzie Mbako, and then you got a lot of bigs on the lineup, and then Gabe Cupps as a point guard. So I think they kind of need Anthony Walker to try and get some minutes eventually. So I think he's going to have a little bit of easier time settling in because he's getting a lot of playing time early. So I'm going to buy Anthony Walker. I want to jump to you just mentioned him. You talked about him kind of in relation to Walker. Let's talk about Peyton Sparks by yourself.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, UNIFYD, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
I'm buying him. I think he was the first one that Indiana grabbed in the transfer portal, which sometimes means it's kind of a smaller name. But I think his physicality, the fact that he's staying in his home state and his numbers from the last few years at Ball State, I think really is going to prove something. One of the top players in Ball State history as just a freshman, MAC freshman of the year, averaged 13 points. I worry a little bit about his free throw numbers were not great, but his ability to rebound, he just had enough assists. Turnovers a little bit worries me, but I think the fact that they went out there and they really prioritized getting Peyton Sparks, the Indiana coaching staff, tells me something. Averaged around 30 minutes a game, which is right what you need for someone like him, especially if he's going to come off the bench and provide a spark, pun intended, now with his last name. We'll be hearing that, I'm sure, a bunch of times, but I'm going to buy into Peyton Sparks' stock and his potential down low.
You might have just been the first to relay that pun that we're going to see from probably every play-by-play broadcaster throughout the year for Indiana. Yeah, I buy him just because Indiana doesn't really need him to do too much. They need him to do what he's good at, which is playing defense down low and being able to rebound. They don't need him to average 13 points a game like he has. They don't need him to play a ton of minutes and be able to get up and down the court for 35 minutes. They need him to give some of the bigs a breather and just be able to hold his own. And I think that's something that Sparks will be able to do. I'm going to go last one, not a freshman, not a newcomer, but someone who's expected to take a little bit more of a role. How about CJ Gunn by yourself?
I'm going to sell him, man. I know the 3-point numbers last year, I think, is the biggest thing that strikes me. Just 5 for 19. I mean, the fact that he shot most of them was impressive, and he definitely has confidence in himself, but I just never saw him, even his body language at times. Sometimes he was a spark, but I worried sometimes about the condition he was in. Obviously undersized. I know he put on some weight, which is important, but I didn't see him get too much of a role last year. Obviously, Jalen Hood-Schifino being there didn't help him in that case. But in the fact that Indiana kind of needed a second guard without Xavier Johnson, CJ Gunn really just never stepped up in the situations he needed to, never was that guy. And, you know, I think he's kind of got the Tamar Bates-esque role. And obviously Bates, such a highly touted freshman, didn't do too much his freshman year. Everyone was expecting a big jump for his sophomore year. Obviously that didn't happen. He may have even gone in the other direction, especially defensively. But if CJ Gunn can be a spark defensively, then maybe I buy, but I just don't see enough. And considering where Tamar Bates went from freshman to sophomore year, I worry CJ Gunn might kind of be leaning that same way. So for now, sorry, CJ Gunn, your dad's great. He's at every game, but I'm going to sell.
I'm going to sell too. I'm going to agree with you on a second one, but I just think he, I mean, in comparison to the kind of situation he was last year, you look at somebody like Caleb Banks, who really made the most of a lot of his opportunities where he got into the game and just being able to plug in wherever they need him to do. CJ Gunn's a little more one-dimensional than that, and being that he's going to rely on some shooting from the outside, that kind of guard, and the defense just not being able to guard a whole lot of different positions and not having quite being able to quite combine the height and speed. So I'm going to sell CJ Gunn. I just think it's somebody that I think as we go towards the beginning of the year or middle of the year in Big Ten play, he's going to be someone that gets lost further down on the bench. And he's probably not included in that first seven or eight that I talked about Indiana going that deep. That's all the buyer sells we have. We're talking about Indiana roster. Now I want to look at the schedule. We'll take a deep dive. Obviously, you get the 20-game Big Ten season. A lot of good opponents there, especially with Michigan State and Purdue. Start with non-conference, though. Three or four of those tougher Big Ten or non-Big Ten games. You got Kansas at home. You got Auburn of the Hoopsgiving in Atlanta. And then you – all the excitement around the Empire Classic going on in New York City. I know you'll be there taking on UConn or any national champion first. Let's just talk about the Empire Classic first. You know, going up into the Empire Classic, you have FGCU, Army, Wright State. Unless you object, I don't see any of those three teams giving Indiana too much of problems. Wright State's been a good program in the past, but early on in the season, those mid-majors just can be tough for them. So we go into the Empire Classic. It's early in the season. You're playing UConn, and then depending if you win or lose, you get the winner or loser of Louisville and Texas.
Yeah, we've seen Mike Woodson, obviously, the first year that he was at the helm. The non-conference schedule was bad. There was not a lot. The only real, I guess, the best non-conference was Notre Dame, really, a tournament or a tournament-esque team that they beat, but Indiana didn't play well, and Notre Dame kind of up and down that season. But of course, last year, it was all about the Big Four, those Big Four games. Let's go through it. Xavier, Kansas, it was Arizona out in Vegas. And there's another one I'm obviously forgetting. UNC, duh, obviously that was the big game. And Indiana went 2-2. That was kind of the number that we felt like Indiana needed to hit in order to kind of satisfy expectations and move forward. Obviously, they won those first two and then lost pretty badly in the next two. And, of course, lost Xavier Johnson in the Kansas game. But for me, these are solid tests. Obviously, you return Kansas that home game. I know it's over break, but hopefully the students can really fill it out. Obviously, that's the preseason number one national champion from a few years ago. And Indiana-Kansas, lately, the recruiting battle has been great there. But let's start with the Empire Classic. UConn is a very, very good team. They were so underrated last year. Obviously, got off to that incredible start. Cooled down a bit in Big East play. That's what that conference will do to you. And then they turned it around and kind of steamrolled their way to a national championship. So that's an excellent team right there. UConn, obviously, kind of, are they a blue blood or not? There's that conversation. But they're a big team. So that Indiana will kind of, you like the matchup, or at least it'll challenge you down low. And the fact that you play two games in 2 days, we have not seen that from Indiana really at all in the regular season since, I guess, the Big Ten tournament was the only time that Indiana has played in back-to-back days. So I think that philosophy, are these guys ready? Obviously, if you win, you would think Texas beats Louisville. I know Louisville was awful last year, and I think everyone's hoping that's not the case this year, just so the games are good at MSG. But a great test early. We saw, of course, I feel like Michigan State had such a tough non-con last year. There were times at Illinois when they impressed early. So it's a time where you can impress. You can't, you know, obviously take everything from that. It's not going to decide their season. But I like to start the Empire Classic, and then I don't want to say cool down, but you go on the road. Obviously, again, this year, no true non-con road match, no true road game. This year, I know Auburn is down in Atlanta, but that's, I think, something of importance that Indiana will not get, I guess, a true crowd in a rowdy environment like this all last year in Kansas.
Yeah, I think on the surface, it's easy to say, well, UConn, they won the national championship last year, and coming into this year, they're a top 10 team by pretty much anything that you look at, any ranking that you look at. But it's a different kind of situation because it's not like they're returning a bunch of guys from the national championship team. They reloaded with a lot of talent. You know, they have Donovan Klingon coming back, who had a pretty big role off the bench in that championship team, a couple guards here and there. But it's not a UConn team that's coming off some turnover that with those teams, you have a pretty good guess. They're going to be a top 10 this year with the talent, but you don't know for sure. I don't think they're a surefire to be that top 10 team as we see with somebody like Kansas or even teams in the Big East Conference like Marquette or Creighton. So that's going to be interesting. And on top of that, even if they are good at the end of the year, it could be slow for UConn to get started. I still think that's going to be a tough game for Indiana, obviously, and one I don't expect them to win. I like what you said when you said 2-2 kind of plays into expectation last year, and that's what they did. This year, it might be a little different. I don't know, because the Kansas and UConn right off the bat, there really weren't those games like that, maybe at Kansas last year. But that was only one game last year where you said, okay, they probably will lose that game, and you kind of chalked that one up. There's two of those games this year, it feels like, with two top 10 teams in UConn and Kansas. And then Auburn and, you know, you play Texas or Louisville in that second game, and if it's Louisville, which it probably will be the way things will probably shape up, just making a prediction right now, that's a game you should win, which is also one they didn't really have last year. You know, you went into Xavier, which is a tough entire environment, and then Arizona were the other two games that were kind of toss-ups, it felt like, for Indiana. They were able to win one and lose one. So you have one on the tough side, one on the easier side when you look at last year. But then Auburn, it just depends on which way that one goes. If you want to say if it's fair to expect this team to go 2-2 with non-con in those tough games.
Yeah, I'll add one thing quickly. I think the fact that last year Indiana competed with Arizona, obviously there was that god-awful non-goaltending call, which really changed the complexion of the game. And then Indiana had a full week off to prepare for Kansas. And yes, they lost Xavier Johnson the first half, but they got blown out. They did not show up, and Kansas absolutely ran them right out of the building. Again, this year, Indiana has an entire week off. I know it's the week of finals, which is always why that's the case, but you have a week off between Auburn and Kansas. So you come back from Atlanta, get ready, and you can build up the crowd after all the students have been, you know, hunkered down studying for exams. You get hopefully most of them that, you know, got that part of that ticket package are in the building. So the fact you have a full week off again, you cannot disappoint like you did last year and just completely have a no-show against the Jayhawks again.
Chronologically, looking at the schedule, we move on now. In the middle of those four tough non-conference games, you start Big Ten play. Of course, that's a new thing that started with the 20-game conference slate being instituted a few years ago. You have a first home game against Maryland, who's expected to be a top four team in the Big Ten, and then you travel to a rowdy Ann Arbor, Michigan. So that's a tough start to the Big Ten play, especially at that point in the season.
Yeah, last year, I think the expectations obviously were so high to start the season, and they started with, you know, a game on the road against Rutgers. Obviously, they didn't have Jalen Hood-Schifino from that game. He was nursing kind of that back injury, and that was kind of, well, you just beat UNC. What can you do next? And they were in that game, and then Rutgers went on some crazy run, and that, I guess that was the start of really that home atmosphere that Rutgers has built over there at that, you know, feels like high school building. I went there last year. That place is, it's crazy how small it is, but give credit to their fans. Scarlet Knights do a good job of showing up, and Jersey Mike's Arena, they sell that place out, even though there aren't too many seats. But and then they came back and demolished Nebraska. At least it's not Nebraska again this year in that December game, because that feels like a yearly tradition at this point. But Maryland, obviously a team that beat Indiana in the regular season. Indiana got them in the Big Ten tournament, but that's a Friday night game. Obviously, Jameer Young, it's a solid guard Maryland team that's headed by a bunch of guards. Kevin Willard's done a fantastic job. And then you go to Michigan. That's another big question mark. Obviously, the Wolverines lost a ton. I didn't restock all too much, a couple guys in the portal, but those are two games where, you know, if you can get one, then great. If you can get them both, then even better, because the non-conference around it is not easy, and it's obviously, it helps when you have those, obviously, those rest of those non-con games after Kansas to kind of round out the 2023 slate of the schedule. It's, can you build on some momentum and maybe this year start 2-0? The last 2 years, Indiana's been 1-1 under Mike Woodson in those first Big Ten games.
I'll say it. I know there's some polarizing opinions on this. I like the 20-game conference schedule. I don't like that you have two games that you play in the start of December. I think it should still be, you just add those conference games, but it should still be those 20 games or your last 20 games of the season. Your full non-conference slate should be for that conference slate. That's just the way it always had been leading up. And there are still conferences that do 20 game conferences and get away with that. Like the Big East, I think the SEC is, or SEC or ACC, one of the two is like that. It's just weird. You don't know what to expect out of those Maryland and Michigan games just because it's just too early in the season for those important of games. It's hard going to Michigan all the way up in Ann Arbor, and a Michigan team, it's not expected to be as good, but you're still going to a tough environment where they, at that point in the season, they will not have gone to a tough environment, really. The Empire Classic, I mean, might have a good amount of UConn fans. That might play somewhat of a factor. But Indiana should too, just with how the Indiana fan base travels and how big they are. So I think those are just tough games to kind of predict. And those are before Auburn and Kansas. Then you get a few bye games and over winter break that are at the end of December, Morehead State, North Alabama, Kennesaw State. And you flip it to January, and then you finish out your season with 18 conference games. The start of January is interesting. You go to Nebraska and Rutgers for the first three games, and then you host Ohio State, who's expected to be a solid team. Those are three more games that you know, Nebraska not going to be as good or going to be better than they were last year. And Rutgers not going to be as good as they were last year. But Ohio State, a team that a lot of people are expecting to be pretty good, and having to go two of those on the road, those games feel like they could be three toss-ups.
Yeah, absolutely. Obviously, we know Indiana's lack of success against Rutgers. It feels like in every sport nowadays, but especially on the road in Piscataway, that's not an easy game. Students will be back, I'm pretty sure, after break. But you go to Nebraska, okay, everything builds up, it feels like, to Purdue, as it happened last year, Ben. Obviously, Indiana went through that three-game losing streak where Jackson Trace wasn't healthy and just no one was playing well. Obviously, a couple of those games were over break, but Indiana did not look like the same team. And then they rattled off five straight wins before Purdue came to town. Obviously, they lost right before the Boilers, and the number one-ranked team came to Bloomington at the start of February. But it feels like this year, again, Indiana can give themselves a decent chance at building up. You know, they got four games after the new year in Big Ten play before Purdue comes to town on the 16th. They can win maybe three out of four of them. Obviously, Ohio State going to be a much improved team. Chris Holtman kind of went through the gauntlet last year, kind of dragged through the mud until the Big Ten tournament when they won three games out of nowhere. But obviously, they were still nowhere close to the tournament. But obviously, Minnesota team, they fared well against Nebraska. Those teams, again, supposed to be at the bottom. But Ohio State is a match that really interests me. Obviously, 2 years ago, they played them, I want to say, on the same date over break before the students came back in Indiana. That was their best defensive showing, one of the entire year, and they dominated. Of course, that was a much different Ohio State team. They had those bigs down low, but it could be much more interesting. Obviously, Jameson Battle, a big name the Buckeyes picked up in the portal, the former Golden Gopher. So that's an interesting one. And we know Indiana only two losses last year at home. Feels like you have to beat Ohio State and at least go, you know, what is it, six games before Purdue comes. You'd hope you'd be 4-2 at that point. It feels like 5-1 would be great because that means you could steal a road win against either Michigan or Rutgers. And feels like 3-3, that means you drop a home game and things aren't great. And you figure Purdue going to be a top 10-5 team, if not a number one, if things fall their way. So again, an encouraging start to the conference. We couldn't say that last year, but it kind of all depends on what type of Indiana team we get night in and night out.
Yeah, it's interesting because you have that Minnesota game right before the Purdue game at home. A lot of people can look at it and just kind of label it as a trap game. You know, we have a big team like Purdue coming up, Minnesota. A lot of people think it'll be last in the conference, and it's at home. The way I see it, we've seen this a few years in the past. Indiana hasn't always been on their best streak going into the Purdue game. So I think if you can get on a good note after playing at Rutgers and then getting that home game against Minnesota, that can be big leading into that Purdue game. And then you got to look at the effects of the Purdue game after the Purdue game as well, because you go to Wisconsin, which could be another trap game. Really, I don't know if you call it a trap game. Wisconsin, a team that feels like is a high floor, low ceiling kind of team, but it's always tough to play at the Kohl Center.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
I mean, Indiana hasn't won there, what, since we've been alive or something like that? They should have gotten it 2 years ago. They blew that 20-point lead, got off to that great first half start and completely collapsed. But a Friday night, it'll be cold in January. The students will be back on campus, and they'll be ready to watch some basketball. Yeah, we don't know about the Badgers this year. I feel like there are a lot of teams in the Big Ten kind of clustered in the middle that we kind of can say, well, they could probably get a top four seed, assuming that we're thinking Michigan State and Purdue are locks to be 1 and 2. And the other teams that could fall and maybe have to play, you know, an extra day and play that extra game in the Big Ten tourney. So we don't know a ton, but obviously after Purdue, boy, that stretch is not easy at all.
No, I mean, you travel to Wisconsin, you travel to Illinois, who's coming into the year as a top 25 team, another team that feels like fans have polarizing opinions about and how good they're going to be. But once again, a fan base that doesn't like Indiana fan base doesn't like Illinois, and that game's at Illinois, so that could be really tough. After those two road games, you finish off January by, I'm sure, Fran McCaffrey will get a standing ovation from Indiana fans coming into Bloomington there on January 30th after everything happened last year in Iowa City with the whole technical foul situation, him coming over to the Indiana bench, and that was a game Mike Woodson was visibly upset after Indiana blew that big lead. So you end off January with some big games. You go through game by game, and it's tough to say. A lot of these games feel like toss-ups just because of how clustered the Big Ten is and really always has been. Last year, you mentioned it. They were going to that last day where Indiana could have been like a 3 seed or they could have been like the 9 seed, and there was a bunch of other teams clustered. You had, what, a 4 or 5-way tie, maybe 3-way tie. Maybe I'm over-exaggerating a little bit, but at the end of the year, and getting that bye could be big. So there's just a lot of games. It's hard to tell right now. There's a couple of tests, though, for Indiana before they go to Purdue for that second Purdue game. You host Penn State, who another team losing Shrewsbury, not expected to do a whole lot this year, but then you have to travel to Ohio State.
Yeah, Ohio State, obviously, we don't really know about them. They should really be much improved last year, and you feel like there's going to be a lot of momentum considering the way they played in those Big Ten games, upsetting a few teams. I know they had to face Purdue, I think, in the semis and play them decently close for a half, but we talked about Indiana on the road the last few years. Obviously, last year were much better, but you think of 2 years ago when the schedule was the same in terms of the teams you play twice versus the teams you play once. I know the venues aren't exactly the same, but Indiana couldn't get a road win against a good team 2 years ago with this schedule, and Ohio State was one of those games during that brutal 5-game losing streak that Indiana had in February where they should have won. They left, who was it, E.J. Liddell wide open down low in the last possession, and then they got steamrolled in overtime and lost overtime period like 13-2 or something ridiculous like that. So Ohio State, that's a team I feel like you have to beat up, especially if things don't go their way at home. You got to find a way to try and win in Columbus. I know Ohio State, we know they're a football school by that point, and obviously football season will be well over by February 6th, but you know they never have a fantastic home atmosphere, especially if the team isn't very good by February. So that's one to think of, a team you have to beat on the road that you necessarily haven't the last few years. Buckeyes got to be at the top of that list.
They made the arena too big. Schottenstein Center just holds more people than it needs to, and it takes away a little bit from the environment. But no, but going back to the schedule, after Purdue, when you close out February, after the at-Purdue game, it feels like that's the easiest stretch, 4-game stretch Indiana's going to have. Northwestern can be a solid team, but that's at home. Nebraska at home, travel to Penn State, and then Wisconsin at home. So 3 home games and a road game against maybe the 13th or 14th best team in the Big Ten. That's going to be big, sort of sandwiched in between the Purdue and Michigan State game.
Yeah, you look at the second half of the schedule, it feels like it's a lot more favorable than the first. That's mainly because you get to play Minnesota twice, you get to play Nebraska twice, There's another team, Penn State. I believe they get them twice as well. Yep. So those are teams that are projected to be probably the bottom four. They're going to have to battle it out on that first day of that Big Ten tournament. But I mean, if Indiana can, you know, kind of keep their heads above water, stay at 500 or maybe a bit over, they can rattle off some wins down the stretch. And really, when they go to Maryland and Minnesota, those two games, that obviously it all builds up to Michigan State on the final day, another CBS game, Indiana under the national stage once again. So once again, it feels like if Indiana can rack up some wins before Purdue and Michigan State, before the top two teams in the Big Ten come to town, those should be some must-see matchups.
You finish off the season with a couple of games, a couple of tough games in between there at Minnesota, but at Maryland to start the month of March. And then just imagining what Assembly Hall is going to be like the one time they play Michigan State this year at home, with a lot of implications on the line, most likely just with how clustered we expect the Big Ten Conference to be and how much Big Ten seeding and NCAA seeding really could be on the line. That's going to be a lot of fun to close out the season that month of March. Before we get into our predictions and our end of the year or preseason superlatives, I want to get a couple sleepers for you. So two sleepers of teams that could upset Indiana, teams that could be sort of be trap games, and two sleepers of teams that you think Indiana could upset.
All right, so we'll start, I guess you know, people always say you want the bad news before the good news. So I guess in terms of teams that can upset Indiana, I'll start with Wisconsin. Obviously, the Kohl Center, a place that Indiana has not played very well. I guess they're kind of right there, 5-6 in that preseason poll. So maybe it's not necessarily an upset, but I think another team is Iowa. I mean, Iowa's always had Indiana's number the last few years, no matter where they play. And especially Indiana hasn't been able to stop Iowa on the glass. We know Mike Woodson absolutely despises Fran McCaffrey, and I'm sure McCaffrey doesn't have any fond thoughts about Woodson as well. So I'll say Iowa. And I guess if you throw in Wisconsin, I know they're kind of right next to each other in terms of an upset, but those are teams that Indiana gets a few shots at. And I'll let you make your picks before we can go to teams Indiana can upset.
Yeah, I'm going to go January 3rd at Nebraska. I think it comes at a weird time, just in sense of you had played Big Ten games at that point, but you're coming off three bye games. So I think, you know, this sort of a Big Ten shock, even if Nebraska is not one of the top teams in the Big Ten, they're still a Big Ten team expected to have one of their better years. And you have to go to Lincoln. It's a weird point. It's over winter break, so the crowd doesn't play as much of a factor, but I just think the level of competition Indiana has going up to that game could be sort of rough. So that's one. The second one, I think there's a home game against a team around Indiana level that they could drop this year just because of how loaded their road schedule is this year too. So I think even something like home against Wisconsin. I know you talked about how tough it is to play at the Kohl Center. Wisconsin, it always feels like a team because they play so disciplined and they play so fundamental. It always has a chance to upset you, and Indiana can run into a rough night like that at the end of February. That could be something I could see them losing.
You bring up a good point about Indiana kind of starting off on the road. Obviously, last year there was that really strange two-week break, essentially, that Indiana got after those two bye games right around the Christmas time. And obviously, Indiana came out really well against Iowa and dominated the first half and then completely capitulated in Iowa City. And of course, the year before, that first game to start really the Big Ten stretch was against Penn State on the road. That's a place where you can fall asleep there because there's no one, there's no crowd whatsoever. And Indiana threw up a dud, and Penn State played really well and beat them by a possession. So you bring up a good point. Indiana starts on the road to start the new year for the third straight year, I want to say, to start Big Ten play. That's something interesting, and Indiana's got to be ready for that. I know they have a game a few days before, but it's kind of that Christmas window is always kind of strange, obviously not having classes, getting some time off with the family. But the fact they have a game 4 days before, I think, helps a little bit in that stretch, but you always got to be wary.
Yeah, so give me a few teams you think Indiana could upset.
Well, I mean, you have to say Purdue. I think that's the first team that comes to mind. Obviously, we know the IU-Purdue rivalry. Indiana fans will show out. The line out the door is insane hours before the game. And obviously, you found a way to stop Zach Edey not once but twice last year. You circle that game on the 16th of January. If Indiana can roll in with a couple of wins or even a loss like they had last year when they lost to Maryland on the road before Purdue came to town, you have a 7-footer now in a Khalil Ware to potentially stop Zach back Edie. And I know the guards need to take a step up this year for the Boilermakers if they really want to be a preseason top five team in the Big Ten. But you have to start with Purdue in the sense that Indiana knows how to beat the Boilermakers 3 out of 4 times. Mike Woodson's gotten the better of Matt Painter after that long losing streak. So I think to start, it has to be Purdue. And a team on the road, I think it could be Illinois. I think that's a team that Indiana got the better of last year, not once, but twice. I know Illinois was really, really not that good last year. They had pretty high preseason expectations and could never meet them. But if you can go on the road, I know Illinois, I think, hates Indiana more than Indiana hates Illinois, whether it's a rivalry or not, is a conversation for another day. But if Xavier Johnson can play up to the level that he's expected to, and I know TJ Shannon returns, that's obviously a huge returning piece, one of the top players in the Big Ten potentially for the Illini. But Dane Danger is supposed to take a big step in year two for him down low. They added some guys. Coleman Hawkins, of course, such a great utility player, can kind of play anywhere. But Indiana's had Illinois' number at least since that Big Ten tournament game. So I'd be careful. I know the State Farm Center is a tough place to play, but last year the Indiana completely took sucked the air out of that place. So I'll say it can happen again, considering we don't know, I guess, a ton about Illinois as well, but as expected and deservedly so, they have higher preseason expectations than the Hoosiers do.
I'm just dreaming about what that last regular season game, home game, Assembly Hall against Michigan State is going to look like. I talked about it a little earlier, but I think it's a game where Assembly Hall just comes together and Indiana has a real shot to beat a Michigan State team. And when you play a team only once in your conference and it's so late in the season, you don't have a lot of great scouting material because you hadn't played them yet. A lot of times I think that hurts the favorites more than it hurts the underdogs. So I think Indiana's got a real shot at Michigan State. I think a lot of things come together. Secondly, I don't know how much an upset you want to say it is, but just because it's away at a decently tough place to play, I like Indiana at Maryland this year too. I think could be a big one. You know, Indiana has gotten a lot of slack for hate for not being able to win road games in the past. I think that got picked up a little bit last year. And I think they're going to pick up a couple big ones this year. And I think Maryland's a team they match up well against. So I like Maryland and Michigan State. All right, not a ton of time left. So we're going to try to do some rapid fire. First, predictions, record prediction, NCAA tournament prediction, Big Ten standing prediction.
Oh, boy, it's a lot you just threw at me. Obviously, it's hard to do math on the fly here, considering we don't major in math here. Numbers aren't our best friends here. But for me, I think straight off the jump, it's a more favorable Big Ten schedule this year. Obviously, last year, Indiana was 12-8. The year before, they were 9-11. So that was a pretty good three-game jump. For me, I will say 10-10. I think that they're right in the middle in the Big Ten. Kind of, I guess that's naturally, I think, where they should be in terms of the standings, kind of 14 teams. I think sixth is kind of where I'll have Indiana at 10-10. Maybe you win a few tiebreakers, but I just think the potential is high. I don't think this team necessarily has what it takes. Obviously, you worry about maybe some guys kind of just the work ethic, the mental side of things. Can they be able to play, you know, in this gauntlet under Mike Woodson, who obviously is a much harder coach than I think some of the others, considering his great success under Bob Knight and, of course, coaching in the NBA. But can the guys adjust? I think 10-10 in the Big Ten seems about right. I feel like they're not quite as talented as they were last year. The schedule is probably more favorable than it was last year, but I kind of have somewhere in the middle of the last 2 years under Mike Woodson. So I'll say 10-10, which puts them in sixth. And I guess in that non-conference, I'll say they go 1-3 in those four big non-conference games. So that means 13 losses and however number of many wins that is. I don't know how many bye games there are on the schedule, but I'll say in those four big non-cons, they go 1-3. I think it's just a bit tougher, especially kind of the way the schedule works with breaks and whatnot. I think it'll be difficult, at least for the students, to, I guess, enjoy this team early on. So I guess that's what, 13 losses and count the number of wins. So 10-10 and 3 losses in the non-con.
18.
That's right. There you go.
Yeah. I like the 1-3 in those big games non-con. I just think that's the way it's going to be. And I think it's not hard to figure out. I think it's that win against Louisville in the second game of Empire Classic, and then you lose to UConn, Kansas, and Auburn. I like 11-9. I think you mentioned it. They're going to be middle of the pack of the Big Ten, but I think it's an Indiana team that's going to figure it out more as the season goes on. So I like to be a little optimistic towards the back half of the season with the favorable schedule. So you combine the 11-9 with the 8-3, you're sitting at a 19-12 record. I think the same thing, though. I think it gets you fifth or sixth place in the Big Ten. I think you don't get the double bye, but you do get the single bye. And then NCAA tournament prediction, I think, you know, doing that in the Big Ten in the regular season, I think it gets you on the right side of the bubble. I'm going to say it's 10 seed for the Indiana team, and I think they could run into some trouble in the first round against a 7 seed.
Yeah, I was thinking 10 as well, and I guess 10 is the number for me, 10 wins, 10 losses, and a 10 seed in that big in the NCAA tournament. I think that there's a concern that this team might not, you know, could be on the wrong side come March if things, I guess, go drastically wrong. But I don't think it's out of the realm to say that Indiana is not a lock for the NCAA tournament and definitely has some work to do to get on the right side of the bracket come March and Selection Sunday. But I think that's about right in the middle of the pack and somewhere right around 500, a 10 seed. And you hope you get a win and maybe give yourself a shot to get back to the Sweet 16. But that's been the issue the last few years. I've been able to win one, but not that next one with some tough turnarounds.
All right, you got the predictions. We're going to do some rapid fire preseason superlatives before we end the 2023-2024 preview. Five players, five awards here. We're going to do an overall MVP prediction, offensive player of the year prediction, defensive player of the year prediction, newcomer of the year, which you kind of already touched on, and then most improved player. So let's hear those five for you.
All right. We'll start with team MVP. I guess the guy at the top, for me, it's going to be Xavier Johnson. I think he leads this team in scoring. I think he's going to have to make a huge jump because Mike Woodson is not going to be afraid to basically pull him or do whatever he needs. He was sitting next to Mike Woodson a lot last year with that boot on his foot, kind of just picking Woodson's mind. It feels like one day Xavier Johnson can almost be a coach, I guess. I'm not saying he doesn't have the talent to make it to the next level, but I think he has that mind that's sharp enough to make the right decisions and really understand Mike Woodson a lot more. So for me, he'll be my MVP, a newcomer of the year. It would be easy to say Khalil Ware considering his potential, but I just don't know in the big set necessarily where he belongs at that five position or, you know, kind of what his role is going to be. And Kenny, I guess he's a guy who I think people worry about that maybe he won't get along with the other players or something like that, which is, I think, a reason why Mike Woodson is going to really challenge Khalil Ware. For me, Mbako, I guess, is a newcomer. Then for me, he's the top guy. What are the other three? Or there's a lot you're throwing at me here.
Player, defensive player, and most improved.
All right. For most improved, I will say Khalil Ware. I think Mike Woodson works with him the entire year. I think they figure him out. They figure the rest of the guys out around him. And I think he makes a pretty good jump. And, you know, obviously he was projected to be, you know, on the top, towards the top of draft boards a few years ago. He's coming, you know, coming into the season. He and Mike Woodson wants to help him get back to those expectations he was at. So I think he maybe won't necessarily be a lottery pick or anything like that. But I think Mike Woodson will work with him. I think he's most improved. Offensive player of the year, it's tough. And the defensive end as well. I will say defensively, I think Malik Renu takes a big jump this year. The fouls were his biggest issue. I'm not going to say he's going to be Indiana's best defensive player by all means, but I think he makes a big jump. But offensive player of the year, I will give it. I think Trey Galloway takes a big jump. He needs to improve on his three-point shooting. I think he could be Indiana's X factor, not Xavier Johnson X factor, but the Trey Galloway factor, I guess. So for me, I'll go him on offense and defense. I'll take Khalil Ware at 7 feet. I with Mike Woodson's defense and the way he developed Trace Jackson Davis defensively into one of the best shot blockers in the entire country last year, I think it'll be the same for Khalil Ware. So I guess Ware is on two of my five.
I'll start with Agrania. I'll go Khalil Ware in terms of defensive, who I think will be the defensive player of the year, just because, like you said, his height and because of who Indiana has on the schedule. With the Big Ten, a lot of the best offensive players on their opponents are big guys. So I think Khalil Ware is going to need to be big defensively, and I think he will take that big point. Offensive player of the year, you talk about him making a big jump defensively. I think Malik Renu takes a big jump offensively. I think it's an Indiana team that knows how to play inside and knows how to play with skilled scorers down low. And I think Malik Renu showed at times that he can be a skilled scorer down low. Also, the offensive rebounds. And the offensive rebounding we saw from him last year, I think helps him take a big jump. Look at most improved player. I'm going to go Anthony Walker. I think just in terms of getting more playing time and then finally being able to do something with that playing time is going to be big for him. I think that's just what he needs, is to get settled in to the same kind of level that he played at Miami. I think if we look at my team MVP, before we get to the newcomer, team MVP is tough just because there's so many different things that play a factor, but I think I'll agree with you and Xavier Johnson, and just the leadership and experience is going to, even if it doesn't show up, things don't show up on the stat sheet, I think that's going to be big for this Indiana team, is just to have someone like that, because they really don't outside of somebody like Trey Galloway. And then my newcomer of the year, I kind of touched on it earlier. I'm going to go with Khalil Ware. I think he plays a big factor defensively. And then I also think he might grab a little bit more of a scoring role this season. And finally, if he's able to stay fully healthy, then we're going to really see a full season of Khalil Ware and what he can do with that. But that wraps up our superlatives. That wraps up our predictions in the second episode of House of Hoosier. Once again, follow us on Twitter on House_Hoosier. That's where you could find this podcast, or on the Field of 68 Twitter, or on the Field of 68 Podcast Network on YouTube. Try to pump out content or podcasts at least weekly. Maybe get some players, other past players, other guests on as well. We'll just see as the season it moves forward. Try to get more creative content on the Twitter as well. But thanks for tuning in today. The 2023-2024 Indiana men's basketball preview on the House of Hoosier Field of 68 podcast.